League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
So with all this NFL talk, the MLB needs a little love.
The who?
The yes. MLB.
I love baseball. Bring it on.
Well, there's been a trade, and it was announced today. The Yankees have finally traded Sonny Gray. They traded him to the Reds. That was a long rumor that that deal might go down. And so it is unfolds. The Reds pick up Gray. They sign him to an extension. So they've locked up Sonny Gray for at least 3 years. They have an option for a fourth. So they'll add Gray to their rotation. And in the deal,
the drop Reds, pick went to Mariners.
Well, yeah, the Reds give up a prospect, second baseman Shed Long, who will go to the Mariners, and the Mariners will send a minor league outfielder to Josh Sowers to the Yanks. So not a big deal. I mean, Sonny Gray was a guy who was on the big radar at a midseason trade deadline a couple years ago.
And the Yankees have just been trying to get rid of him, give him some space.
I think the narrative on him is he's got some pretty good stuff, but he doesn't seem to perform well on the big stage. New York might be too big a market for him.
No, he's being traded with a 5 ERA, and yeah, he's got to improve that. So it's a tale of two Sonnies. I've followed that through his career.
Yankees, I think we're hoping to get a little more for him. I mean, that's not a big return to get a minor leaguer out of the Mariners system.
No.
So Sonny Gray moves on, and he will be part of that Reds rotation. Tell you what, the Yankees have made some good pickups in their bullpen. They got Zach Britton, and then they got Adam Ottaviano from the Rockies. They are building another Uber bullpen. That's been their trend over the last few years.
And that was their weak spot, if there's a weak spot for the Yankees. So,
well, they'll do that. Red Sox, of course, on the bullpen front, still have a big hole. They lost Joe Kelly. They lost Craig Kimbrell. And they have, well, they've said they don't want to sign anybody for a big contract at the back of that bullpen. So it's a big question, who's going to close games for the Red Sox this year?
And, you know, the Astros should be thinking about that, too.
Well, Astros,
need to
I'm
start
worried
growing
about their
pitchers
starting
on trees.
Pitching.
Well, so, I know.
I mean,
Keuchel's not signed yet.
Keuchel's and Morton's gone. Keuchel, I guess, yes, he could come back. But
I don't see that happening, and McCullers is out with Tommy John. So.
Yeah, so that's three guys who are quality pitchers who probably won't be part of the plan next year. They've got to find another starter.
They need another Garrett Cole.
All right, when we come back, we've got a real treat. We're going to be joined by Alex Sparth. He is of the CLNS Media Network, and he's a reporter for the Patriots. So we're going to talk to him about all things New England sports when we return on SB Nation Radio.
Birthdays, holidays, anniversaries, whatever the occasion is, Gifting Map has you covered. Visit giftingmap.com for great gifts. That's giftingmap.com, your map to great gifting. This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
All right, joining us now on SB Nation Radio is Alex Sparth. He's a contributor to the CLNS Media Network. Alex, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, congratulations to all of you up in New England on your big win yesterday. I wanted to begin by asking you, who do you think had the better game yesterday, Belichick or Brady?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I'm going to have to go with Belichick just because it was on both sides of the ball. I think the offensive game plan, specifically in the first half, you couldn't script it any better than that outside of the one bad interception on the goal line. I think they came out and did exactly what they needed to do on offense. And on defense, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce combining for four catches at 64 yards. I don't need to talk any more about that. I think those numbers speak for themselves.
So, Alex, welcome in. I know it's a good day for you today, all things Patriots. But I want to ask you, so We're looking now that the Patriots are going to a record 9 Super Bowls out of 18, including 3 in a row with this year's. So why did this, they've been there many times before on this big stage, why did this conference championship seem to feel so special? I mean, Brady's look when they won was like, can you freaking believe this? Why? Why this one?
You know, I actually wrote about this afternoon. It's up on clnsmedia.com. I think there were a few factors that went into that. I think there was kind of the nature of the entire season, that they were done, that this was it, that the dynasty was over. And then more immediately, just in that game that they were considered an underdog, when you look at the Patriots' big wins in the past, you can sometimes tell based on the way they react when they feel like an opponent was truly a worthy adversary, when they feel like they truly accomplished a test. You know, you watch Brady at the end of Super Bowl 51 against the Falcons, it seems to be more of a sense of relief than anything else. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you look at the end of Super Bowl 49, he's jumping around in circles. A more, you know, mundane example, 2016 opener, the Patriots have to go to Arizona, play a team that was 13-3 the year before, and do it with a quarterback that had never started a game before, Jimmy Garoppolo. That was during Brady's suspension. The look in the locker room after that game, you felt like they won a playoff game. So I think the Patriots know, and they elevate their celebration when they know they beat a worthy opponent. And going to Kansas City and playing that Chiefs team, that was certainly a worthy opponent.
And Alex, do you really believe this talk of the Patriots being underdogs? I mean, yes, by Patriot standards, they didn't have the same season that they've had. But underdogs? Is this what they're using for motivation? Or do you really feel like, yeah, they're underdogs?
And as she asks that, note that we're sitting here in Texas and you're up there. We don't think of you guys as underdogs on any occasion.
Not at all.
So, and I get why it comes across like this. And I talked to Jake Asman about this on his show last week. If you look at it objectively, and yes, I feel like there was some confusion with this. Tom Brady was not the underdog. Tom Brady was the better quarterback in that game, better option. I know Mahomes is going to be the MVP. I get all of that. But it was the biggest stage he'd ever played on. It was the best team he'd ever played. Brady had been there and done that. Brady is not the underdog. When you look at the entirety of the roster and where the game was and the conditions surrounding that, that was the Chiefs' game to lose. I really believe that, you know, on paper, the Chiefs should have won that game, and that, by definition, makes the Patriots the underdog. Now, did they blow that narrative up a little bit to motivate themselves? Absolutely, sure, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But, you know, just like it was sometimes with Peyton early in the first decade of the dynasty, like I think it was with Seattle in 2014, like it was the couple of times they went to Denver early in this decade, that was the opponent's game to lose, and the Patriots went in, and they took it away from them. I absolutely believe the Patriots were the underdog in that game. Not sure if that narrative flies in 2 weeks against the Rams, but they certainly got the most out of it when they had it.
We're talking to Alex Barth. You can read him on clnsmedia.com. So, Alex, of the three, I want you to stack rank them and tell me who's going to be the first to retire, second to retire, and third to retire. And here are the three: Brady, Gronk, and Belichick. In what order do they leave the NFL?
So Gronk is first. I think Gronk is, this is it for him. He's playing in his last game next Sunday, and that will be it. He'll go off to a career in TV or movies or, frankly, whatever he wants to do. He's going to be very successful. He played last night like it was the last game of his career, and I think that's because he thought it might be. After that, I think Brady. I think Brady's going to stick it out as long as he can. I really do. He has to play at least next year because he's very image conscious. And after the way everything went down with Garoppolo and all of that, it would not be a good look if he retires after this season and leaves the Patriots without a quarterback. It just wouldn't, and he's aware of that. I don't think Belichick's ever going to be able to step away, because some people say, oh, you know, he'll pull in Al Davis and he'll become like a pseudo GM, head of football operations, part owner, whatever. Belichick's not going to let anybody else coach his team. If he's picking the players, he wants to be down there on the sideline. And as long as he's picking players and developing them, he's going to want to see that through. He's not going to want to step away. So I don't think Belichick's going to retire for quite some time, frankly. I think he's going to be around for a while.
You know, it's striking me because he obviously would probably know more than whomever would coach underneath him if he took more of a GM role.
Right.
He would know more. But what I wonder is how he relates to players. I mean, one of the trends in the league, of course, is younger coaches who can relate to younger players. But he didn't seem to have any issues with that.
Because he wins.
Yeah, and I mean, he's Bill Belichick, and you think about these players now. Take Obi Melifonwu, for instance, who's a safety on the Patriots. They acquired him as a free agent. He'd win with the Raiders to start the year. He grew up in Grafton, Massachusetts. It's about 40 minutes from Foxborough. He grew up watching the team. He was 7 years old when the Patriots beat the Rams in the Super Bowl in 2001. You're telling me that guy, watching football his whole life, having seen Bill Belichick dominate his whole life, isn't going to go in and listen to every word Belichick says. I think the legacy is what gives him the command that he needs in the locker room.
Mm. It's striking. Okay, we were speculating here. After the Dodgers and Red Sox World Series, and now we got Patriots and Rams, I don't know if you've seen any statistics, but the probability that this would have taken place and that the cities would have matched up twice, what does that look like to you? Are we going to see Celtics-Lakers in the NBA Finals? I don't think so, but it's remarkable.
Sorry, what was that?
Well, it's just remarkable that we're sitting here with this same matchup of L.A. and Boston after the Dodgers and the Red Sox. But we're speculating what the probability or likelihood that that could have actually taken place.
So I can tell you this. I looked this up today. I went back as far as 1980. Between the four major sports, never has two of the final rounds been contested between the same two cities. Only once since 1980 did two of the finals have opponents from the same state, and that was the NBA and NHL in 1999. You had the Knicks and the Spurs in basketball, and then in hockey, you had the Sabres and the Stars. So you went New York and Texas in a couple series in 1999. But as far back as 1980, this has never happened. It's just a lot of fun. I mean, I do a lot of Patriots stuff for CLNS. I actually work heavily with the Red Sox stuff, too. So there's a carryover between those two, and we've enjoyed kind of the back and forth. And, of course, Beat L.A. is a classic chant in Boston, and that's getting plenty of use this time around. It's just fun because there's a familiar rivalry. And then on top of that, the Patriots already beat L.A. in the playoffs. You remember they beat the Chargers. So that's another rarity in that if the Patriots want to win the Super Bowl, they would have to knock off two teams from the same city.
We are making history here.
Absolutely.
Now, we're talking to Alex Barth, who's a contributor to CLNS Media out of Boston. Let's shift gears. I got time for one more question. I want to ask you this, since you're up in Boston. Who is going to be the closer for the Boston Red Sox when the season starts?
I cannot tell you who it's going to be when the season starts, but there's this kid named Urban Feltman. He was as high as high A last year. They took him in the draft. He accelerated through the minors at a TCU. The kid is absolute nails. I do some work for the Little Spinners. I got to talk to him a few times. He has the brain you want every closer to have. He is fiery competitive. He is not fazed by the big moment. He feeds off of a crowd. I don't know who the closer is going to be to start the season, but it should be Feltman to close the season. I'll tell you that.
That's great intel. We got it from Alex Barth, so watch for him. I have to think they're going to pick up somebody else to add to that bullpen, but maybe not the ultimate closer. Very interesting to watch them. Really a fun offseason coming up, still remaining for the Red Sox. Alex Barth, thank you so much for joining us. We'll have to get you back on and talk some Patriots after the Super Bowl. We'll see how it works out.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
See, always when you play that song, Jose, Carla starts shaking and dancing and moving around. And
I call me Carla B.
Carla B. Oh, that'll work. You know, Cardi B is coming to Houston for the rodeo.
I know. I love Cardi B.
Will you be there to watch her to sing like crazy?
Possibly.
She'll be there. He's being modest.
I'm being modest. I'll be there. Going to Justin Timberlake tomorrow night.
Are you really?
I am.
Where is that?
Toyota Center.
Okay.
Home of the Houston Rockets.
I'm out of that loop.
That are getting their booties handed to them right now by the 76ers, but we're not going to go there.
Well, I wanted to come back to the Cowboys have fired their offensive coordinator, Scott Linehan. And on the one hand, that didn't surprise me, right? He'd been critiqued a lot for sort of lacking innovation this year. The offense did look sort of one-dimensional or static, didn't have a lot of moving parts.
And Dak's not developing as he should be, I think.
And there are questions about Dak's development. I mean, the hard issue for me with Dak Prescott is his accuracy hasn't been very good, and he hasn't shown good touch and authority on some of his throws. I think he needs a great coach. I mean,
he needs a great coach because what you just mentioned are tangibles.
Mm-hmm.
The intangibles, the leadership, the respect of the locker room, the will to win, he's got those.
He's got those.
And those you can't coach. So I think they were right by letting Linehan go.
Okay, so Linehan's gone. What's curious to me are, well, the whispers are that the new offensive coordinator of the Dallas Cowboys will be Kellen Moore. Now, Kellen Moore, of course, is the current quarterback coach of the Cowboys.
He's
a former backup quarterback. Yeah. He was a backup to Dak Prescott, and he's now coaching him as a quarterback coach. I really would be surprised with that choice. I mean, first of all, Moore's on the staff. So if the offense isn't working, he had an opportunity to fix it. You could say, oh, well, he couldn't fix it because he was squelched by Linehan. But he was there. He was in the room. He's been a voice in Dak Prescott's ear for the last 2 years as the quarterback coach. So to pick him now as the offensive coordinator and assume that he's the answer seemed a little far-fetched.
I think it's a real pivotal time for Dallas because they outperformed. How they started the season and how they ended the season were two totally different looks.
Yep.
And I think they are on the right track, and the team saved Jason Garrett's job. These are really important hires. You're about to pay Dak Prescott to be your franchise. You've got to have a superstar in there developing him. And clearly, Kellen Moore wasn't that. I mean, Dak had a respectable year, but you just mentioned things that could be so much better with him.
Well, the other whispers are they're going to bring back John Kitna and that he might be the quarterback coach under Kellen Moore if Moore is the OC. John Kitna is another former Dallas Cowboy. He was also a former quarterback in the Rams. He's been coaching at the high school level most recently.
Can you just please repeat that?
I don't know that I really want to go there. John Kitna.
7 years at the high school level. I just don't know that prepares him for Dallas, for America's team, for what Big D is trying to do. I don't know. Do you like it?
No,
I
don't. I think they've got to find somebody really exciting for that offensive coordinator position.
So what if he did a Bill O'Brien and made Jason Garrett the signal caller?
Oh, I do not want that. Mm. Remember, Jason Garrett was the signal caller, and he was the head coach. And then, not working. So they brought in Linehan. Now that Linehan's gone, I don't think you go back to Garrett.
I think you tell Stephen Jones, you're our Cowboys insider.
Yes.
Go back to the drawing board. There's a lot of people who would love this job. They've got a great offensive line. They have a great quarterback with raw athleticism and great leadership ability. You've got a great runner in Ezekiel Elliott. You do need some receivers. And come on, get someone to make a difference here.
Well, the Cowboys offense, you said they've got a lot of great pieces there. Amari Cooper now really gives him that number one wide receiver.
Love, love, love that pickup.
He was outstanding. Wow. The scuttlebutt coming out of Dallas is they need another tight end. Maybe Jarwin will develop to be a premier tight end. They also would love to add someone at the safety position on defense. But at the offense, you know, if Cole Beasley returns and he's a free agent, so he's a question mark, they've got a lot of the pieces already there. They might look at receiver or tight end on offense, but otherwise they're in a pretty good spot.
And Beasley's a question mark of whether he wants to come back or not. Right?
Yeah, he's a free agent. And it's just a question at his age and, frankly, his more limited skill set, very good at what he does, whether he's going to command a big contract. That remains to be seen. But I think in the Beasley case, I think Beasley will be back. I think he fits nicely into that slot position. Tavon Austin's another guy who plays that role. He also is a free agent. So they have a decision between those two. And then they've got to round out or answer the question at tight end. Jeff Schwamm is a free agent. He has been injured and was injured down the stretch, but he's never going to be a standout tight end. Blake Jarwin showed some flashes, particularly in the final regular season game against the Giants. And they'd love to think they found an answer in him. Dalton Schultz, their fourth-round
draft pick. I like
him,
the kid out of Stanford.
Yeah, he's out of Stanford. He's a tight end who showed some things this year. So perhaps with Schultz and Jarwin, they've got young guys who can step into that role. But they've got to find a coordinator to make it all work. And I don't think it is Kellen Moore. Shifting gears in the NFC East, it looks like the Eagles have a little bit of a drama brewing. This is the headline the Philly Voice reported in an article published Monday morning that Well, Wentz has about a half dozen people in the Eagles players. Carson Wentz, there are a half dozen anonymous Eagles players calling him out. And the report describes an, quote, uneasy dynamic within the Eagles organization. Sources accusing Wentz of playing favorites and failing to take accountability. And at the same time, the report describes Nick Foles as someone who is universally loved. That surprises me. That report, not that Nick Foles is universally loved, but that there were issues with Carson Wentz in the locker room.
You know, it the locker room part does surprise me. But what doesn't is, because you look at how the team absolutely embraced Nick Foles last year when he took over for Carson Wentz. And how not only just winning the Super Bowl, but then when he came in this year and did an amazing job with losing Wentz again. And the players openly, they just, that locker room absolutely loves him. And it just, it gave me cause to pause. Like, it's okay to love someone, but you're also, I don't hear the guys saying he's a great placeholder till Wentz gets back or really miss Wentz. There's no mention of Wentz when you hear all the love for Foles. So it reminds me a little bit of the Seattle situation with Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson with the defense, the Legion of Boom, feeling like Pete Carroll was playing favorites with the offense and with Russell Wilson. It's not good. You see what's happened to Seattle since then.
Well, the Eagles are going to get rid of one of those quarterbacks, almost assuredly. It will be Nick Foles who departs the Eagles. But I did raise
the
question.
They would have to pay him $20 million to keep him.
Yeah, they're not going to keep both. They could probably get away with it because Wentz is still under his rookie contract. They could probably get away with it for another year. But they're going to keep one. And Wentz being younger and having all the upside that he does, I guess he's the answer. But I don't know that it's a certain answer. I could see how the Eagles could win with Nick Foles. They could probably trade Wentz for a bounty. I mean, in a quarterback desperate league for a guy who's demonstrated his high level of play, Wentz would get a big bounty in return. Anyway, I think it's a fait accompli. I think Foles is going.
I do too.
The question now is, where will Foles go? I like him for the Jaguars because I think they're a team that has all the pieces but a quarterback, and Foles would slide neatly in there. They don't have a great wide receiver on the Jaguars. They probably need to upgrade the receiver position. But if they could sign Foles, add a receiver or two, they've got a pretty well-rounded team.
Well, you know, I'm looking at Miami, too. He'd be a great fit in Miami. I don't think Ryan Tannehill is the guy for you, and he can't stay on the field. And, you know, the Giants are another one if they don't want to look in the draft.
Yeah, the Giants, that would have to be an Eli or Nick Foles decision. For me, I think what the Giants are going to do is they are going to draft. They're going to draft high. They've got a top 10 pick. I think they're going to maybe even trade up to get the quarterback they want. Not a great quarterback class.
I was going to say, it's not. I mean, it would be almost a great time for the Giants to bring in a Nick Foles because it's not a heady draft class.
No, it's not. And the Giants are not a rebuild. I mean, they've got lots of pieces. When you drafted Saquon Barkley last year, you were intending to win in the short term. We'll see.
And then you've got the Kyler Murray factor as well.
Yep. Nope.
If, you know, he's declaring for the draft, but is he going to go? And if he does, do you want a 5'9" quarterback?
Well, Giants currently slated to draft at number 6 overall. It would be hard to take Kyler Murray at 6, knowing the uncertainty about what he's going to do, baseball or football. Dwayne Haskins may well still be there at 6. Giants may have to trade up to get him. I mean, Drew Locke is the other guy often mentioned in the first round.
Right,
he's the quarterback out of Missouri. But I think Nick Foles goes to the Jaguars. I think that's a perfect fit for him. Let me ask you quickly. We're now at the place where we can start talking about the offensive rookie of the year and the defensive rookie of the year in the NFL. I think I've got my picks.
Okay, let's hear him.
Well,
I know who you're going to pick.
Well, look, I think the offensive rookie of the year is Baker Mayfield. Saquon Barkley, you can make a case for him, but Baker Mayfield, look at that franchise. They had gone 1 win, 31 losses in the previous 2 seasons. And Mayfield came in, and in his last 6 starts of the year, they went 4-2, and he threw 19 touchdown passes over his final 8 games.
And how many interceptions? He had a pretty good number.
Baker Mayfield, rookie of the year.
Okay, you're probably right.
You agree with my choice.
No, I'm...
Reluctantly. I will say this. You know that I thought that the Browns should have taken Sam Darnold. I thought he was the number 1 quarterback in the draft. I thought he was the guy they should have picked. but they didn't. And Baker Mayfield, he justified the pick.
You know, he did. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to give that to you.
Quickly, I'm going to tell you my defensive rookie of the year, Darius Leonard of the Colts.
Oh,
outstanding
yeah.
linebacker. Other guys, Leighton Van Esch, Derwin James, Bradley Chubb, those were all great players.
I know. I love Chubb and Van Der Esch, too.
All right. When we come back, we'll have the famous He Said, She Said segment here on SB Nation Radio.
Birthdays, holidays, anniversaries. Whatever the occasion is, Gifting Map has you covered. Visit GiftingMap.com for great gifts. That's GiftingMap.com, your map to great gifting.
What did you just say? What the hell?
It's time for He Said, She Said on The Boss and the Gloss.
You know, when your battery loses power, you lose your ability to get out, get around, and get things done. And when it's time to replace your battery, you need to trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts to help you choose the superstar battery that's an exact fit for your vehicle. Whether it's reliable economy, hard-working premium, or powerful extreme, O'Reilly Auto Parts has a superstar battery you need at a guaranteed low price. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, now we shift to the award-winning, highly acclaimed, much-anticipated He Said, She Said segment. And this is the moment when we hear what sports luminaries have said, and we offer our own commentary, and we start at the top. When we think sports luminary, let's go to bad boy Tom Brady.
Bad boy Brady, that is funny.
Is he not a bad boy?
Well, after last night, he is.
So he let it fly, didn't he?
He let the F-bombs go.
All right, let's hear what Tom Brady had to say after the big win.
What's it mean, after all of that, to head back to the Super Bowl?
I first want to say hi to my wife. I love you so much. I'm coming home. Mom, Dad at home, my sisters, all my family. Thanks for your love and support. And all our fans back home. Way to go, man. What a year. What was your question?
Just what it means to go back to Super Bowl.
Unbelievable, bro. This is crazy. What a game.
Tom F-bomb Brady.
Okay, there is my argument right there.
Yes.
For why his game last night was not the greatest ever. He's shocked. He's like, this is un-freaking believable. I threw basically three interceptions and we still went. Look at that.
Well, I do.
Credit Matthew Slater. He won the coin toss.
Well, he won the coin toss. And I'm going to give some credit to Alex Barth, who came on with his last segment and noted that if you really stacked ranked the rosters of the Chiefs and the Patriots, yeah, the Chiefs have they had more talent on the field.
Definitely. But they didn't have Belichick. Although Andy Reid is he is a close second.
Sure.
If not an equal, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
And his adjustments at halftime were right on.
But they were late.
Yeah, his only regret is it took him most of the first half.
Yeah.
Right. All right, let's go to the next one. One of the most exciting things of the championship game yesterday was Tony Romo correctly predicting the plays. Let's listen to Tony Romo and his ability to see what is coming.
35 would have been ball game.
Gronkowski out wide. They've got to get him. He's your guy when it's one-on-one. They finally got him. There he is.
On the top of the screen.
If he's doubled, you're going to throw inside right here to Edelman. You just look up there and pick him.
Here they come after Brady. He goes down the field to Gronk. Turns around, makes the catch. He saw what you saw, Tony. With 4 yards away from New England taking back the lead.
They're going to run this ball. Kansas City's got to sell out.
There's a handoff to Burkhead. Burkhead pulls ahead and scores the touchdown.
Gronk's got a chip. Running back's got a help, so he has time to throw. Once again, Edelman in the middle of the field.
Pocket sealed. Down the middle. Edelman again with a third down catch.
Okay, you want to know how good Tony Romo is?
Yes.
You know who's calling on him now?
Who?
Bryce Harper. He's like, Romo, where am I going? Romo's got an answer.
Well, isn't that perfect? Because Harper knows he needs some help. He needs to know in advance, and Romo's the man with the answers.
And where did you tell him he's going?
He said the Texas Rangers.
Well, how about that?
Well, that's what Romo says, but he's sitting there in Dallas, and so he's giving a little hometown push.
After yesterday, I'm asking Romo secret questions. He knows the answers. That was impressive.
Romo now, America's favorite color commentator.
Exactly.
And we noted earlier, I mean, this is a guy who... It sounds like you're sitting down next to a fan. He really loves the game, has a passion for the game. You can feel his energy, and then he's just so brilliant smart. I mean, he knows what's happening. He's able to not just be a fan, but also a knowledgeable fan.
Well, and it's got to be great for him to have a 10,000-foot view of the field that he has seen, you know, in action for years and years and years, to be able to, you know, note cover one, cover three, single coverage, you know, blitz, whatever, and just and be able to talk about it.
Right.
It's a gift. He's right. Awesome.
All right. The NFC title game overshadowed in controversy. And after the non-call, Saints head coach Sean Payton talked about the referees.
Frustrating, you know, just getting off the phone with the league office. They blew the call. And, man, there are a lot of opportunities, though. But that call puts it first and 10. We're on an E3 plays. And it's a game-changing call. It's where it's at. So it's disappointing. Credit the Rams. They made enough plays, though. They won the game. The kicker made some big kicks. But for a call like that not to be made, man, it's just hard to swallow. It was simple. They blew the call. They said it should never have not been a call. They said not only was it interference, it was helmet to helmet. There were two calls. They couldn't believe it. We spoke initially, then I called to follow up, and first thing Al said when I got on the phone.
Okay, my favorite thing about he's right. He's right about that.
No
they
doubt.
Blew not only one call, but two calls. And credit Sean Payton. It was a tough day for the Saints. He said that the Rams did enough to win, and credit Greg Zuerlein, kicker for the Rams. I mean, look at his day. He had all six kicks, four field goals, 2-point afters, hit the 48-yarder to tie the game at the end of regulation. That's some steely nerves. Then in overtime, hits a 57-yard field goal, to which you reminded me that thing was still going.
Yep.
Could have been 60, 70-yard field goal. So, you know, I love that he gave credit where it was due. Good for him to follow up with the NFL office. Some changes are going to have to be made.
I'm still signing the petition.
You are, I know. You
feel
want
like
Goodell,
you're going to do it on more than one email.
Well, I've been.
Have you?
I believe in voting early and often. Yes, I'm voting. I'm signing the petition. I've got lots of emails in there. I think I put Carla Dawson in there too.
I also put Jose at theproducer.com. So watch out, Jose.
Hey, I'm not mad. I wanted to vote on the petition.
You think Rogers should overturn it?
Just
to cause some.
Yeah, why not?
Fuss?
Well, as we played out that mental exercise earlier. If that were to come to pass, if we were to go down on the field and have them resume the play from that moment forth, it would be a monumental event. I mean, they could probably sell a whole other round. They could make a lot more money. And
could be pay-per-view.
There could be a lot of opportunity for the NFL not to be lost on the headquarters in New York.
But you know what I'm saying? You got to take it back to that missed face mass penalty. So let's be fair.
I understand. All right. Now, it's rare, but when a player has a call go his way, usually they just sort of quietly sneak out of the building. But the Rams cornerback, Roby Coleman, who committed the infraction, committed the non-call, he acknowledged that, well, the Rams got away with one. Let's hear Roby Coleman.
Came to the sideline, looking at the football guys, like, thank you. Got away with one tonight. You know, it is what it is.
He thanked the football gods.
We mentioned the football gods earlier in the show that they were smiling this weekend.
And they weren't just smiling because of Michael Thomas looking up at them.
With his own version of a smile.
Yeah, vertical
Saint
smile.
Style. Yeah.
Yes. No, but Coleman, I mean, he was quite forthcoming here, acknowledging that he just put his head down. He knew he was out of the play. His whole mission was just to make sure he hit the guy and that there would not be a touchdown on the play. So he really wasn't even looking for the ball, and he acknowledged it should have been a penalty.
And, you know, he took a chance there, and it is not to be blamed on him that the call wasn't called. In fact, both calls were not called.
Yeah.
So, you know, I appreciate his honesty and that he was like, I put myself out there. I took a chance, and, you know, luck went his way, too.
All right, let's go to the next one. This is an odd one, and it helps
funny.
If you actually see the video on it, which I would encourage our listeners to watch. But apparently the Rams have their own, quote, get back coach. This is a coach that keeps Sean McVay from wandering too far on the field. This coach keeps pulling Sean McVay back out of the referee's way so they don't get a penalty.
Coaches, whether it's, you know, a position coach or even Sean McVay now, I literally have to spend most of my time while the offense is on the field standing right behind Sean and ripping him out of the way when the official's about to run into him just so we don't get a penalty. There is an art to it. It is kind of like a dance, maybe tango, like a sidestep into the path of the official and then remove back.
Okay.
It's a tango.
That is refreshing. I mean, that's some great energy that you want to have. I might need a get back coach.
Well, no, I have no doubt. I don't really know why Sean can't just remember. He needs to stay behind a
He's so focused.
He's so focused.
Is that what it is? All right.
So I did some research, and apparently this is Ted Rath. He's a strength and conditioning coach for the Rams. And I guess his second job is the get-back coach. Make sure Sean McVay doesn't get a penalty.
Well, he needs to be strong because he's always pulling Sean McVay back off the field.
Well, clearly he is. He's their S&C guy, so there we go. And I love Sean McVay's just childlike focus and energy. He's all in.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to be worried about that kind of stuff. He's got his get-back coach.
Who are we to criticize him? They're in the Super Bowl.
No joke. I am all for it.
It may be due to the get-back coach.
I mean, they've got everything covered, including the get-back coach.
All right, look, over the weekend, this feud between Westbrook and Joel Embiid has, it reignited. And let's listen to Russell Westbrook talk about his frustrations of playing and battling Joel Embiid.
Embiid foul late, is that just him landing on you? Or what was your objection to it?
I don't think he just landed on me. He had a little extra to it. You know what I'm saying? But it's okay.
You guys are cool?
No.
Woo!
There's no doubt about that. There's a lot of F-bombs going on this weekend.
Well, it's Jose, you pick these things.
I know you guys like the F-bombs. Come on.
He does. Don't put me in that camp, Jose. No, you know, I love Embiid's response when he said, this is Westbrook's answer to, are things cool with you all now? And it was his bleep. No.
Not so much.
Embiid's like, he's always up in his feelings.
Yeah.
And he's right. Now, Russell got the last word because they won by 2 points in a very, you know, highly contested physical game. But
yeah.
And they've owned the 76ers. I mean, I think it's 18 games straight they've beat them.
Yep.
Consecutive wins. But nonetheless, Westbrook, that's a way to get to him. He's easily ruffled.
All right. We've gone through the he said, she said. There's one other topic I really wanted to get to, which is, I mean, this might be a little hard for you. I mean, I guess our listeners don't know, but you're probably young enough to be my daughter. And when I look at this, what I've got is a list of things that did not exist when Tom Brady first played in the Super Bowl. I mean, he first played in the Super Bowl back, and it was in the Super Bowl of 2002. They beat the Rams 20-17. So around the time you were born, I think. And the amazing thing is to look at all those things that did not exist in 2002. Let me offer a few. The iPhone.
Okay, that... You know, kids can't even imagine that now.
There was a life before the iPhone. Tom Brady was playing football. Can you believe that? Facebook, which is now old, I guess. Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, Gmail.
What?
Yes.
That's not right.
I mean,
really?
Google was around, but I guess they hadn't introduced their Gmail service.
Unreal.
Uber, which is like a word now. I'm going to Uber home. It's now a part of our vernacular.
In 2002 it was, but it was, oh gosh, he's uber sensitive to what I'm saying, putting down, or he's
right,
uber that you
uber
used it
cool
that way.
Yeah, and that yeah. In those days you were uber young, but now we've got
uber. Now I'm uber, we won't go there.
So that was not even around when Brady last played. All right, let me go to another one. Airbnb, Google Maps.
Oh, gosh.
And then, dare I say it, the iTunes Store did not exist when Tom Brady first played in the Super Bowl. The iTunes Store wasn't there.
And Spotify wasn't there.
Spotify wasn't there.
What did we do without Spotify?
We didn't even have an iPad back then.
Jeez, that is crazy town.
That shows you the longevity of Tom Brady. The world has changed from his first battle against the Rams to the one that will happen a week from this Sunday.
What are you predicting for the outcome?
I think it's Patriots. I just don't think that the Rams are really ready for this stage, this moment. I don't. For all of Sean McVay and the growth of Jared Goff, I think the Patriots have one more that they're going to pull out, and I think it's going to happen. It's Patriots over the Rams. And what do you think?
Sticking with my California connection, I love that defense in L.A., and I love the city of L.A. behind them. I mean, they've got a team back.
All right.
Let's do this one for the city.
Jose, you got a pick?
How poetic would it be for it to start with the Rams and end with the Rams as well? I want to say the Rams, but I just can't pick against Brady. Not after what they did to the Chiefs.
This is my whole underdog argument is underwear. There's no underdog anywhere in this situation. Yeah.
I hear you. Mm. All right, when we come back, we will wrap it up by looking at what we've learned from the gloss. You're listening to SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, this is my favorite segment. We get to revisit what we've learned from the gloss over the last couple of hours. Let me start with a matter of fashion.
It is the shortest segment I've noticed.
It's a short segment, okay. But here we go. In the matter of fashion, you like. The Rams have selected to wear their bright yellow
retro, and bring it
blue,
on.
The retro jersey. You like that the Rams will wear their retro jersey in the Super Bowl.
I love it. It's got good karma.
Okay. Love those colors. You like Tony Romo in the broadcast booth.
He has taken my John Gruden place in my heart. Yes.
That's
love him.
That's a big statement.
It's a big statement. I love that guy. But yeah, no, Tony Romo's got it going on and CBS hit the lotto.
Okay. You think Greg Zuerlein deserves a little more credit. Maybe he was the MVP of the Rams' victory.
I give him the MVP yesterday. Kicker, absolutely steely-nerved, did his job, and did it beautifully, with yards to spare.
You attribute the disappearance of Todd Gurley to injury.
Yes. Left knee.
You don't think he just had bad performance?
I don't. I think if he had a bad performance, it was because of the knee. I think it's bothering him, but he's not going to use that as an excuse. He's a gamer.
You were very reluctant to admit this, but the offensive rookie of the year in the NFL?
Do we have to go through this again? We already talked about it.
It might just be Baker Mayfield.
Okay, you can have it.
Yes. You didn't like him ever since he grabbed his crotch in college, did you?
No, it was before that.
Oh, before that?
It was before. Too much bravado for me. But it's working for him. He deserves that award, and the Browns are lucky to have him.
All right, last one. Though you like Tony Romo, this week you're really high on Michael Thomas for some reason.
Oh, stop yourself.
He looked pretty good.
He looked good. He was smiling from all ends.
Alex Gold coming up next, the Gold Standard. Be sure to stay tuned. He'll have fresh insights from Kansas City. Alex Gold next on SB Nation Radio.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.